searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special report.
I'm back. Good morning and welcome into this edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there, it's Friday. And for the last couple of days, I've been a busy boy, haven't been able to be here, but it's good to be back in the studio again. Starting the day off as I usually do, by having a little time together with you. It's good to be here. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this sometimes hour of observation, insight, and a bit of absurdity. On this Friday, the 8th day of May in the year 2020. The last couple of days, as I said, I've been busy doing studio work over at the Dawson Now Studios and recording audio from webinars and other things, putting together a podcast. Interesting podcast that will be released Tuesday evening, Friday morning, or Wednesday morning. Wow, where did the week go? Tuesday evening. That's how it's been for me, Tuesday to Friday. Coming up next Tuesday evening on the Dawson Now podcast, a guy who's been running a huge music festival for years, a thing called Life Fest. It's been going on for years and years and years. A guy named Bob Lenz, who, when you hear somebody use the phrase sweetheart of a guy, that's Bob Lenz. He's a sweetheart of a guy, and he is the real deal. And if you're not listening to the Dawson Now podcast, in addition to this one, I encourage you to give it a shot, because Bob Lenz is a good guy. There's some good information from some good people, some people who Scott Dawson refers to as cultural catalysts. And they are. They are people who are changing their culture. They are, by dropping them into the culture, everything around them changes. And Bob Lenz and the other people interviewed on this podcast are those people. It is, we're looking at an interesting weekend around here. I checked weather before I came to the studio. I was hoping for a nice day, because when I get through with the podcast today, I will be out and about again, but at least I have the morning, most of the morning free, so I can be in the studio and hang with you guys. And so today I'm helping Mom. She's had a TV suffer. I don't know if it's an early demise, because it's not a new TV. It's been around for some time. I bought it in a thrift store years ago, and it's been a nice TV, but they had a lightning strike. Everything blinked off and on a few times, and ever since then, this TV will come on, and it'll come on for just long enough for you to see, oh, that's the channel we're watching, and then it goes away. And you unplug it for a few seconds, plug it back in, and it's so old, and for so little money. I mean, you can buy a brand new TV, a 4K television for relatively little money, and so that's what she did. And so today, I'm going to go haul her old TV off and go with her to pick up her new TV and get it all set up for her. So I'm being the good son today. And then after that, who knows what'll happen. My wife, Jane, sweetest woman in the world, she's off half a day today. So after lunch, we'll be hopefully having an opportunity to get out and about and enjoy life a little bit today amidst the thunderstorms. There's not much open, so that. You know, I don't know how that's going to pan out, but we'll do what we can. How about that? And news-wise, life has been interesting over the last couple of days. Golly, you talk about taking a vacation, and when you take a vacation, everything happens. Wow, did a lot happen. A lot happened over the last couple of days, and we'll dig into some of that today as we have time. It's just an hour. I hold myself to an hour. I won't go any further than that, because that's just what I wanted to do every day, and that's what we're going to do. But we'll see how this all pans out. Creepy Uncle Joe has got some stuff going on. I'm not sure if we'll get to it, because I got to be honest with you. When it comes to stories of real importance, Creepy Uncle Joe keeps getting shuffled further and further down the stack. Because by now, you and I both know that Joe Biden is a long-time creep. He is a longtime political manipulator. He is a longtime liar. Been lying for ages. That video has popped back up again recently. That video of him lying about his college education, about him coming out at the top of his class, about him coming out of college with three degrees. He lied, bald-faced lied to the people on camera, in front of God and everybody, and TV cameras. And he talked about his education and bragged and bragged and bragged. And then it came back that most of what he said was an absolute lie. That's come back up. Plus, what's circulating around some more today is a reminder that he lied for years about how his wife died. And he blamed his wife's death on an innocent truck driver when the evidence in the case indicates that his wife wasn't watching where she was going and pulled out in front of a truck. And for years, Joe Biden blamed the truck driver and accused him of driving drunk. Lying. Lying to get pity, lying to get sympathy, lying so that he could be a victim. Lying. That is Joe Biden. He always has been and always will be a habitual, compulsive liar. And in that, he is the perfect progressive politician. And a lot more is going. I mean, Uncle Joe, the Democrats are putting a lot of faith in Uncle Joe. I don't see how they can. I don't know any rational thinking people who see how they realistically can. And there are a lot of conspiracy theories bubbling around on the back burners of the stove everywhere about who his vice president's going to be. Watch who his vice president's going to be, because that's the person who'll really be president. And there may be some validity to that. And it will be interesting to see who his VP pick will be. He has made a lot of it being a woman. He has made a pretty good bit out of it being a woman of color. We'll just have to see what really happens there. And as a result, people are saying, oh, yeah, it's Michelle Obama. Well, I don't know about that. I just don't know. I don't have a lot of confidence in that. There are people who are saying it's Hillary Clinton. I don't know. She has made it a point lately, whenever she appears in public, to look authoritarian and together and sharp. And I part of me says, ooh, she's angling for something here. But then who knows? We just have to wait and see. We'll just have to wait and see. So creepy Uncle Joe is really not a big story as far as I'm concerned in the news today. What is a big story? Tiny tyrants and the coronavirus pandemic. That's a pretty big story. We're going to look at a little bit of that today. And first off, we're going to look at what happened yesterday or the day before. What's been happening with General Flynn? President Trump praised his former national security advisor, Michael Flynn, and tore into the administration of former President Barack Obama yesterday after learning that the Justice Department had dropped its case against Flynn. He said he was an innocent man. Now, in my book, he's an even greater warrior. He said this during a meeting at the White House with Texas Governor Greg Abbott. By the way, Governor Abbott, get a bit of control over your state, would you please? Because San Antonio and other places are tipping the scales for insanity. Just a side note. The Justice Department's move to drop its case comes shortly after internal memos were released that raised serious questions about the nature of the investigation that led to the retired Army Lieutenant General's 2017 guilty plea for lying to the FBI. He was manipulated, by the way. Forced into a corner, given basically no choice, and he did what he had to do. Those documents showed how agents discussed their motivations for interviewing him in the Russia probe, questioning whether they wanted to get him to lie so he'd be fired or prosecuted, or get him to admit wrongdoing. Flynn allies howled over the revelations, arguing that he was essentially set up in a perjury trap. And I would say they're probably correct. In January, Flynn moved to withdraw his guilty plea for lying to the FBI in the Russia probe, citing bad faith by the government. I think we all remember that. That court filing came just days after the Justice Department reversed course to recommend up to 6 months of prison time in his case, alleging he was not fully cooperating or accepting responsibility for his actions. The case had been plodding through the court system with no resolution ever since his original plea, even amid speculation about whether Trump himself could extend a pardon. Remember, that was something everybody was talking about. Oh, he'll pardon Flynn. Trump said, they're human scum. It's treason. The president also targeted the news media for its coverage of Flynn and called the New York Times and the Washington Post to return their Pulitzer Prizes for coverage on the investigations into Russian interference during the 2016 election. Trump said those writers are thieves. They should be forced to give back Pulitzer Prizes. And he's right. Remember, Flynn's case stemmed from a 2017 FBI interview in which he was asked about his conversations with former Russian ambassador to the U.S., Sergei Kislyak. Flynn ultimately pleaded guilty to making false statements regarding those conversations during his interview as part of former special counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. Flynn resigned from his White House post in February of 2017. The resignation came as he was accused of misleading Vice President Mike Pence and other senior White House officials about his communications with Kislyak. Pence, after being briefed by Flynn, had said in television interviews that Flynn did not discuss sanctions with the ambassador. Following Flynn's resignation, Trump quickly tweeted a defense of Flynn's exit from the White House in 2017, arguing that despite Flynn pleading guilty to lying to the FBI, his actions were lawful. He said, "I had to fire General Flynn because he lied to the vice president and the FBI. He has pled guilty to those lies. It is a shame because his actions during the transition were lawful. There was nothing to hide." Now, leftists, liberals, progressives in politics and in the press are going back to that and saying, yeah, but he pled guilty. And I suggest that you have a closer look at the situation and see exactly why he pled guilty and what he pled guilty to. And remember that everybody who is a rational, reasonable, thinking person around this case has said he was set up in a perjury trap. They were holding him to exact words. They were holding him to standards that they knew he could not meet. They pulled him into a meeting and told him, you won't need your lawyer present. They actually went around the head of the DOJ to set the meeting up. That's coming out now in these papers that have been released. And other shenanigans occurred as well. So please look at this situation in the light of day and in proper context, in full context, and you will see that General Flynn actually was the victim here. And he was the victim of a rogue Justice Department, a rogue FBI, and a rogue administration in the White House, the Obama administration. One of the revelations coming from the documents which have been released in the last couple of days is that President Obama was aware of things in wiretapped conversations with Flynn. Things which he realistically would not have been aware of had there not been some funny business going on in the White House. So, do a little bit of due diligence. Do some digging. And look at your reliable sources, not the left-leaning mainstream alphabet networks and news outlets, but do some digging. Stay away from the conspiracy theory sites and such, and just do some digging with some people who have honestly looked at the situation, people who have been honestly talking about it since the beginning. And you'll see that what the Democrats are screaming and crying about right now and what the media is going on about right now was all a massive setup, an attempt to undermine the fresh new, just begun presidency of Donald Trump. They were trying to eliminate the president who defeated the woman they thought was the sure bet to be the next president of the United States. They failed at their attempt to continue the Obama years. And ever since then, from the day after the president was elected, they have been trying to change America's choice into something else that America did not choose. Because after all, progressives in government are smarter than you. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective, the Friday edition of the show. It's good to have you along today on this 8th day of May in the year 2020. Oh, man, oh, man. Let's get back to things here. I got so many stories I want to cover that are just not going to get covered today. Hours after the Justice Department moved to drop its prosecution of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, Attorney General William Barr opened up about the decision. He was in a news interview with CBS, talking with Catherine Herridge. And he said, our duty, we think, is to dismiss the case. A crime cannot be established here. They did not have a basis for a counterintelligence investigation against Flynn at that stage. When asked about Flynn's decision to plead guilty to a charge of making a false statement, Barr said, well, you know, people sometimes plead to things that turn out not to be crimes. And that's something we all need to remember, is that there is intense pressure. And the higher you go, the more intense that pressure becomes. And in this particular situation, at the highest levels of our nation's government, the pressure is incredible. And remember, Flynn was losing everything. His legal expenses were, and still are, monumental. He lost his home. He lost pretty much everything. Trying to defend himself against something he knew was not true. And finally, backed into a corner, he had to pick the least of the worst options and pled guilty. Barr said he wants to make sure that we restore confidence in the system. He also denied that he was doing the president's bidding. He instead suggested that he was doing the law's bidding. When Catherine Herridge noted that the attorney general was likely to receive a lot of criticism, Barr said, I'm prepared for that. But I also think it's sad that nowadays these partisan feelings are so strong that people have lost any sense of justice. His interview comes just hours after the Justice Department filed a motion to dismiss the prosecution against Flynn. The department said, we do not believe that the government can prove either the relevant false statements or their materiality beyond a reasonable doubt. The government is not persuaded that the January 24, 2017 interview was conducted with a legitimate investigative basis and therefore does not believe Mr. Flynn's statements were material, even if untrue. The move drew swift criticism from House Judiciary Chairman Jerry the Weeble Nadler, the Democrat from New York, who called the move outrageous and called for an immediate explanation. Now, as I told you before, these people are screaming, and they're all screaming from the same bullet point sheet. They really are. They have their talking points. Nadler says, he tweets, this is outrageous. Flynn pleaded guilty to lying to investigators. The evidence against him is overwhelming. Actually, no, it's not. Now a politicized DOJ is dropping the case. It's not a politicized DOJ. It's a DOJ that actually has turned away from politicization and is doing the work of the law. He goes on to say, the decision to overrule the special counsel is without precedent and warrants an immediate explanation. In other words, how dare you go against what we've said? Former FBI Director, Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, released a statement in defense of the Flynn investigation. McCabe also called the decision to drop the prosecution, quote, pure politics designed to please the president, end quote. We know that McCabe is a long-term proven liar, and he's just spouting what he knows he has to spout. Former FBI Director James Comey blasted the department in a tweet, saying the DOJ has lost its way. But career people, please stay, because America needs you. Let me translate that for you. Deep state insiders, don't lose faith. We need you to destroy this president. That's what that says. The Justice Department argued that the investigation of Flynn lacked a legitimate investigative basis. And they're right. These people were trying to make something happen. They were trying to blow holes in the new administration's hull and sink it. They were trying to undermine the credibility of the president. And they were successful with the mindless sheep who follow everything they say, because they're all echoing what Jerry the Weeble Nadler has said. Well, he pleaded guilty. The evidence was overwhelming. He pleaded guilty. As I said before, he pleaded guilty because backed into the corner with no other options. That was the only thing he could do that wouldn't destroy everything he had left to protect his family. Flynn's attorney says this was a deliberate, malevolent, concerted effort to destroy an honest man and thereby get to the President of the United States to destroy him. That's what Sidney Powell, General Michael Flynn's attorney, said to Sean Hannity last night. Said there's no doubt about it whatsoever. He says so just hours after the U.S. Department, Justice Department filed a motion to dismiss the case against Flynn, who did plead guilty to lying to the FBI. And I've explained why. Following Powell on Hannity's show, Senator Lindsey Graham called this a good day for America, because it shows that the justice system eventually does work. That whole eventually part, that's really hard for people who are being ground under the heel of that justice system illegally. The government motion to dismiss the case against Flynn says the FBI's January 24, 2017 interview with Flynn conducted 4 days, 4 days after Donald Trump's inauguration, had no legitimate investigative basis. And therefore, Flynn's statements to the two agents were immaterial, even if untrue. Powell and other Flynn defenders say the FBI entrapped Flynn. Powell encouraged Americans to read the actual documents. By the way, they're available now. In this article that I'm referring to right now, there's a link. These words, actual documents, are a link to the actual documents. Get the show notes and read through them yourself. He says it's important for people to see it for themselves, the actual evidence in the government's own handwriting and documents. Powell also noted that the FBI opened its counterintelligence case against Flynn on August 16, 2016, 1 day after FBI agent Peter Strzok and FBI attorney Lisa Page mentioned an insurance policy in one of their many text messages. The day after that, August 17, 2016, Donald Trump, then the Republican presidential nominee, received his first defensive security briefing from the FBI and reportedly was warned about Russian attempts to spy on or infiltrate his campaign. As Powell put it on Thursday, the FBI slipped an FBI agent into that defensive briefing in complete breach of trust that was supposed to exist there to spy on General Flynn, because he is there with President Trump for that briefing. As the Justice Department Inspector General noted in his December 2019 report, quote, we also learned that because Flynn was expected to attend the first such briefing for members of the Trump campaign on August 17, 2016, the FBI, viewed that briefing as a possible opportunity to collect information potentially relevant to the Crossfire Hurricane and Flynn investigations. We found no evidence that the FBI consulted with the Justice Department leadership or ODNI, that's the Intelligence Department, officials, about this plan. Senator Lindsey Graham told Sean Hannity last night, "My job is to try to coherently, without revenge, but with accountability in mind, explain to the American people how the system failed, how and why." He said, "I'm going to start with General Flynn, the General Flynn case. As soon as his case is dismissed, we'll be pursuing the Flynn investigation and try to explain how it got so off the rails, starting with offering General Flynn a chance to come to the committee and tell the country what it was like to go through this. We now know that from McCabe that without the dossier, there would be no warrant against General Flynn. So one of my goals is to build on the Horowitz report. Horowitz said that the subsource, the Russian disavowed, the Russian disavowed the dossier, said it was all hearsay and bar talk. But he couldn't answer the question. Did McCabe and Comey know the case had fallen apart? That's my job. I'm going to try to answer that question in front of the country." Asked how long it would take to hold such a hearing, Graham said he's dealing with some pretty slippery characters, so he's going to do his homework first. He said, "I'm not going to throw something against the wall. I'm interviewing the people who talked to the Russian subsource. I want to know what they say before I talk to McCabe and Comey." So we know that the dossier has been shredded. It is completely invalid. It has no foundation in reality or truth. We know that the dossier was held up as a reason, even though the FBI knew it was fake. They used it as a tool in their investigation, and they used it as a way to get to Flynn. We know that these people have been manipulating information, false information, and manipulating people, and using our government and our justice system in an illegal attempt to destroy a president. This is salon owner Shelley Luther after being released from jail.
Thank you guys so much. I'm a little overwhelmed and I don't want to scare the kids. I'm okay, but I just want to thank all of you who I just barely met and now you're all my friends. You mean so much to me and this would have been nothing without you. Thank you so, so much. And I'll have more to say when I can gather myself, but I'm a little overwhelmed. I just want to say thank you.
Love you, Shelley.
Love you, Shelley.
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 Wow. She owns a hair salon in Texas, and because she couldn't pay her bills and the stylists who work in her salon, who have spaces in her salon, also couldn't pay their bills, and they couldn't feed their families. They needed money. She decided to stand up against an unreasonable act by government so that they could all support themselves. Because in America, we have liberty, supposedly. She was emotional. She thanked those gathered in support when she was freed from jail. This happened yesterday. And as you heard her say, she said, "I'm a little overwhelmed. I don't want to scare the kids. I'm okay. But I just want to thank all of you. I just barely met, and now you're all my friends. And you mean so much to me, and this would have been nothing without you. Thank you so, so much." She was sentenced Tuesday to a week in jail and a $7,000 fine for opening her salon in defiance of state orders. The businesswoman gained national attention when she gave Dallas Judge Eric Moy a sharp response to his claim that she was selfish for opening her salon. Remember what she said. She said, Judge, I'd like to say that I have much respect for this court and laws and that I've never been in this position before, and it's not someplace that I want to be. But I have to disagree with you, sir, when you say that I'm selfish, because feeding my kids is not selfish. I have hairstylists that are going hungry because they'd rather feed their kids. So, sir, if you think the law is more important than getting kids getting fed, then please go ahead with your decision, but I'm not going to shut the salon. Her lawyer, Warren Norrod, said her client was unlawfully arrested and jailed. She also says, I'm concerned that the judicial system in Dallas is more concerned for one perspective on the rule of law than it is the plight of working people trying to make a living. Though the rule of law is cited by the court, there exists no exception for cities to the general rule that an injunction must be supported by a bond. Without an enforceable injunction, no contempt can be found. Our position is that Ms. Luther has been unlawfully arrested and jailed. I hope to obtain a writ of habeas corpus very soon. Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick announced on Wednesday he would pay the $7,000 fine, would volunteer to serve her 7-day jail sentence. He says 7 days in jail, no bail, and a $7,000 fine is outrageous. No surprise Texans are responding. I'm covering the $7,000 fine she had to pay, and I volunteer to be placed under house arrest so she can go to work and feed her kids, he tweets. Republican Governor Greg Abbott has since amended his executive orders, so Texans who attempt to work against state orders will not be subject to confinement. And that's a good thing. But as I said the other day, the judge in this case is a known progressive who has a track record of progressive opinion and progressive action. And as I said the other day, he was asking her for an apology, and she would not offer up an apology for doing what she knew was the right thing to do, something within her power to feed her family and to allow those who worked in her space to feed. And I put it that way because I don't know if you're familiar with this, but salon owners like Shelley have spaces, chairs, and people come in, stylists come in as independent operators and pay her for the use of the space, the chair, the cabinets where equipment's stored. They bring their stuff in and put it in, and they serve their customers in the owner's salon. Basically, they pay a little bit of rent, and that's where they work, in the space they rent. And so she's got all these people who are depending on her to provide the space for them to be able to provide for their families. And she just couldn't let them go without. And a progressive judge demanded she apologize and admit that she was wrong for doing the right thing. And when she wouldn't, he essentially sent her to her room without her toys. Because progressives are authoritarians who believe they are smarter than everybody else. Remember what I always say, progressives believe they are intellectually and morally superior. And this is a prime example of that. This judge thinks he is smarter, and he is on a higher plane of morality, which is why he wanted her to apologize. Texas is not the only place the insanity is reigning. I told you earlier about Hawaii, remember? In Hawaii, they will send you home if you're caught out and about on your vacation now. Imagine you've planned for a long time. You're going to go to Hawaii. You're going to drive around and see the sights. You're going to take the tours. You're going to enjoy the local cuisine. You're going to see this amazing paradise. because you've always wanted to go there and you've been planning, saving your money, and you show up and you're told when you check into the hotel that since you're not a local, you have to shelter in place, in quarantine, inside the hotel for 2 weeks before you can go anywhere. Well, if you're like most people and you get a week for vacation, maybe 2 weeks a year, and you don't spend it all at once, you know, you go in a lump for a week someplace and then you use a day here and a day there to extend holiday weekends and the like, you know, odds are you've got a week. You're going to be in Hawaii for a week. And you're told when you check into the hotel that you have to spend the entire time you're in Hawaii inside the hotel, probably in your room. What do you do? As I told you the other day when we were talking about this particular situation, I think that as soon as I could drop my bags in the room, I'd be turning around with my camera, my cell phone in hand, going as many places as possible, taking as many pictures of myself and Jane as possible. Look where we are. It's beautiful here. The food at this place is amazing. Can't believe you can actually climb to the top of a volcano. Can you, you know, on things like that. Look at this beach. Can you see the sunset? Oh, my word. My Facebook page, my Twitter feed, everything would be filled with Hawaii pictures with us and our smiling faces in them, so the authorities could find us very quickly and then pay to send us home. Because I'm sure not going to pay to send us home. Well, now Hawaiian authorities are arresting tourists who refuse to adhere to self-quarantine mandates. Monday, authorities arrested a Northern California couple who were visiting the state on their honeymoon. The couple reportedly refused to self-quarantine at the hotel and allegedly would not engage in social distancing. The couple, 20-year-old Boris Lusky and 26-year-old Yulia Adriachenko of Citrus Heights, arrived at a Waikiki hotel last week. When a hotel manager read them requirements about the state's self-quarantine order, the couple reportedly refused to comply with the mandate and insisted on leaving the hotel to travel around the island. The couple continued to flout the order over the following days. According to KITV, the television station, special investigators arrested the couple and charged them under the state's statute for unsworn falsification and violation of the 14-day quarantine order. Oh, so they, unsworn falsification. What did they have to sign? I bet they had to sign something when they checked in, or they couldn't check in. Because they said, remember, it says they wouldn't comply. They said they wouldn't comply. And I would just about bet you that the guy or the girl at the counter says, well, if you don't sign the form, we can't put you in a room. So there you are. You're stuck. Okay, you sign the form. So that's probably what happened. In a statement, Attorney General Claire Connors said, we appreciate the vigilance and cooperation of the hotel staff and staff at other hotels in helping maintain the health and safety of visitors and residents. It is important that everyone flying into Hawaii at this time abide by our mandatory rules. Law enforcement, in partnership with other state and county agencies and the travel industry, are continuing to monitor compliance with the mandatory self-quarantine rule. WKBN-TV reported that Hawaii's quarantine mandates are the strictest in the country, and at least 20 people have been arrested for breaking the rules. The station reports, officials have even considered having travelers wear an ankle bracelet during their quarantine period, or setting up a designated site where tourists would be required to stay for the 14 days. Whew. In April, Hawaii Governor David Ige, he's a Democrat, of course, announced that any visitors or residents would be subject to a $5,000 fine and 1 year in prison if they refused to quarantine for 14 days after arriving in the state. At the time of this article's writing, Johns Hopkins researchers estimate that at least 626 cases of coronavirus have been confirmed in Hawaii. 17 deaths attributed to the virus. So 17 people in the state of Hawaii have actually died from the virus. I would say that probably all of them had extenuating circumstances, you know, probably elderly, probably had comorbidities, because that's the pattern we're seeing. But it doesn't matter, because the law has spoken. The tyrant has put down his foot. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. As usual, during the breaks, I scan social media and ran across this. Looking forward to Hallmark's holiday offering, A Very COVID Christmas, when a big city lawyer and a country candle maker accidentally meet when they go to the wrong Zoom meeting. Oh, that's good stuff. Oh, thank you so much, Gina, for sharing that. That's awesome. Also, Allie Beth Stuckey shared this on Twitter. Imagine being China. You cover up a pandemic, spy on your citizens, murder your dissidents, throw Christians and Muslims into labor camps, evict Africans from their homes, allow only white families to adopt your millions of orphans, and you still get the American media to defend you. Ooh. And it's very, very true. Never, ever forget that. Never forget that China does. It did cover up a pandemic. It spies on its citizens. It kills off those who disagree and will not conform. It throws Christians and Muslims into labor camps. There are millions in labor camps, by the way. They evict Africans from their homes. They allow only white families from around the world to adopt millions of orphans. And yet, the American media and the progressives in government defend them. And I think that is because China has, much like Islam, perfected the art of playing the victim. Well, Mark, what do you mean by that? Well, they portray America as the oppressor and Western civilization as being corrupt and racist. Even though it's not true, they continue insisting it. And they phrase everything in those terms. And they continue to talk about it. And because progressives are all about the downtrodden and feeling sorry for people who are victims, they buy into the lie and refuse to look any further, because they won't doubt people who claim victim status. They won't. And so China, pointing to Western imperialism and everything the progressives say is wrong with America, the Chinese get a nod and a pass from the progressive left, just like Islam does. And that explains in some ways why Christians get treated the way they do in America by the left, and everything that is really wrong with America today. Moving forward, more tiny tyrants. Under Illinois Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker's plan to reopen Illinois through the coronavirus pandemic, churches are included in restrictions that could limit gatherings to 50 people or fewer for more than a year. Pritzker's plan includes five phases of reopening based on defined benchmarks based on the rate of infection in different areas of the state. The first and most restrictive phase is phase one, called rapid spread. All of Illinois has already qualified for phase two, flattening. Phase three, recovery, is dependent on decreased state of infection and hospitalization, as well as widely available testing and contact tracing. Moving to phase four, revitalization, requires a continued positive trend in the aforementioned areas. The final phase, Illinois Restored, requires a vaccine, treatment, or the elimination of new cases over a sustained period of time through herd immunity or other factors. Can you already see now that they'll never reach final phase? Phase four? Can you see that they'll never reach it? Never? Because this, all this talk about a vaccine, there's a lot of hopeful talk, and that's good. Having hopeful talk is a good thing. But there is hopeful talk about, oh, yeah, we're looking at a vaccine. We still don't have a vaccine for HIV. There are a lot of things that we're hit with all the time we don't have vaccines for. And they've been working on them for decades. Under the current phase, gatherings are limited to those deemed essential and limited to 10 people or fewer. Phase 3 allows for all gatherings of 10 or fewer people. Phase 4 allows for all gatherings of 50 people or fewer. So churches that draw more than 50 people won't be able to fully return to normal until a vaccine is deployed. That's not a certainty. Or until there's a highly effective medical treatment available. Which is interesting because hydroxychloroquine is a highly effective medical treatment. But the progressives are standing against it because it was proposed by President Trump. And others are standing against it because it's cheap, and they all have ties to the pharmaceutical industry, which would prefer to make a lot of money. Experts speculate that a vaccine could be 12 to 18 months away from being widely available, and I would inject here at all, if at all. Pritzker confirmed that churches would receive no exemptions from the policy. None. Despite the constitutional concerns involved with restricting religious gatherings, he confirmed that churches would receive no exemptions from the policy. He says he's following the guidance that have been given to him. Oh, it's the experts. The experts. And this is a very typical tiny tyrant move. The experts say. He says, you know that in phase three, there can be gatherings, church gatherings of 10 or fewer. In phase four, 50 or fewer. So that's the guidance that's been given to me. He said this during a news conference Wednesday. He goes on to say, I'm not the one providing that guidance. It really is what the scientists and epidemiologists are recommending. Remember what I said the other day about worst case scenarios? They don't play out. They never play out. But what the scientists and epidemiologists tell you is much like what Dr. Fauci told President Trump. We could have millions of people in the country die if you don't do something. Worst case scenario. Oh my gosh, you mean millions could die? Oh, seriously? Oh yes, sir. The models say this could happen. Well, the models looking at worst-case scenarios, as I said, just don't play out. They just don't play out. Now, think about this as far as the churches are concerned. The churches exist for a purpose, and they also have bills to pay. They have to keep the lights on. They have to keep the water running. They have to keep... They have things to, they probably have, most all of them probably have mortgage payments. Think about what's going on here. Financially, these churches are being driven out of existence. Because preventing people from gathering also reduces the amount that is given by the people. The donations, the tithes, things like that, the amount drops. Ask anyone who is in a nonprofit right now. Forget if it's religious or not, if it's faith-based or not. Ask anybody who is involved with a nonprofit right now how things are going financially, and they will get quiet. And then they'll tell you, it's not good. It's not good at all. Because when things are not active, people tend to not be as involved. And even though people of faith are faithful. It is usually a core group of people who are faithful, and many others who are just there when the doors are open, but really don't financially support. There may be a few people who give large gifts on a regular basis, who keep things financially viable. And the longer the doors are closed, the fewer that number of people becomes. So as a result, with overwhelming pressure like this from a government, preventing them from doing what they do, these churches will end up closing their doors. Afterwards, odds are they'll come back. But in the meantime, there are people. It's not just a building. The churches operate in many ways like a business, because there are employees, there's staff, there are people who man things in the office, even the small churches. Even though they may be part-time jobs, they're still jobs. In tiny churches, the pastors often work other jobs. I heard yesterday there's a guy who's a speaker, a guy who I have heard speak, who is an incredible communicator, who did an amazing job when I've seen him. I found out this guy had to take a job as a delivery driver, because he can't go places and speak anymore. This is a side effect of this happening. There are people who are losing their means of employment, the means of supporting their families because of this. And it's not just in small business, it's also in churches across America and in progressive cities and progressive states. The progressives don't like the church anyway. So for them, it's a win-win. And that is wrong. And that is all for today. God bless you. Have a good weekend. Let's get back together Monday for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast, okay? Bye-bye.
We'll knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?